A man that's very good with his words, though, is Mark Bickley. He's a dual premiership captain. He joins us every Wednesday, which will forever be known as the Captain's Day. Hannah Petty and Mark Bickley,
successful
premiership captains. Hello, Bix.
Yes.
Hello. And a cunning linguist as well.
Oh, very good. Yes. Can you say this for me really quickly? I'm not the sock cutter. I'm the sock cutter's son. I'll sit here cutting socks till the sock cutter comes.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
What about, I'm not the pheasant plucker, I'm the pheasant plucker's son. I'll sit here plucking pheasants till the pheasant plucker comes. Can you do that?
No.
Rich, Mark.
Happy just to talk footy.
For all of this, he can't see the setup when someone sends a text signed off, trees are green.
Yeah, I did get tricked.
And hey, a few others.
Bix, I know, you had to bring up the war, Rich. Bix, as a former captain and a successful one, there's been a lot of talk around the captain's call. In recent weeks, and in lieu of what happened to Adelaide last Friday, would you like to see the captain's call? And how many times should it happen, if so?
I'm not a big fan of the captain's call because I just don't know how it would work. If let's say, for example, forget the notion of what happened on the weekend, where it was pretty cut and dried, where the umpire blew his whistle and paid one free kick, and you know, potentially the captain could have sort of put his hand up or done something, I don't know, whatever the mechanism is, and they could review it. But what happens if it happened a minute earlier on the wing and the player was tackled high but the umpire didn't blow his whistle and play keeps going on and there's no stopping play for another 90 seconds? What happens then?
Well, there's four umpires, I suppose.
You're not taking 90 seconds to challenge it, though, Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point. How do you challenge? I get your point. If there's a non-call and it becomes play on, you still should have some mechanism that allows the captain to go, no, I'm not tolerating that.
It would be messy. And what if the captain's on the interchange bench at the time? Mm.
The team's running into an open goal, and what do you do? Stop play? I want to have a captain's call. And then if the captain gets it wrong, what do you do? Bounce the ball?
They had possession. If they got it wrong, he'd retain possession and he'd have a shot. He'd have to be a set shot, though.
But what about a time, you know, like the opposition have got a player out the back, you know, or they've got an advantage and they're off. They've got a turnover and teams just do on to a captain's call on that, knowing that it's not going to be upheld, but you're going to stop the game while they check and then you get all your defenders back and then the opposition then, okay,
so it could be abused.
Wrong. It's a free kick. Yeah. I just think there's too many ways that the game, it's just not as cut and dried as
we get you.
Well, can you find any positives for it then?
Mm. Well, a bit like on the weekend, you know, you could argue, you know, if the captain was close by, he could have done the challenge. Once again, the other couple, the one with Jordan Dawson against Collingwood, where the AFL also said that was wrong, that was a non-call. So, and then I don't think there was a stop in play, and then the siren blew. So, once again, do you then bring the ball back? I'm not sure. I haven't thought about it greatly, but it just opens a can of worms, and it's not a cut and dried scenario like tennis, where you can, the ball's called out. Cricket, we can challenge that. We can go back and we can look at it. There's a stop play after every point or after every ball, basically. But we just don't have that in footy.
No, that's all right. We wanted to ask because you are the voice of confusion. Reason, sorry. Bix, Port Adelaide have one bad game, and I think we can call it a bad game, even though they led by 31 points at the 24-minute mark of the first term. It was a 73-point turnaround. The natives are restless already. They're scared to believe. Are you concerned about Port Adelaide? And it was against the Premiers.
Yeah, look, not so much. You know, teams have bad games, but I think the thing that people are a bit concerned about is the numbers were very stark in regards to contested ball. They were minus 41. Mm. Now, keeping in consideration, generally if you're minus 20 in contested ball, that's a bad loss. So minus, if you go back to some other of Port Adelaide's bad losses, so the two finals last year, they were minus 22 and minus 17 in contested ball. And if you go back even further to the Western Bulldogs home prelim sort of debacle, they were minus 40-something in that. So basically what that says is when the game gets really tight and when there's it's not a free-flowing game, the pressure's up, there's lots of physical pressure, the ability to win the ball is king. And so those games are generally finals and really big games against quality opposition. And that's the one where they've fallen over. And if you even want to break it down a little bit further, the showdowns are a pretty big game as well, and there's high pressure. The last two showdowns that Port have lost to Adelaide, they were minus 17 and minus 20 in those games as well. So blokes like Laird and Crouch and those ball winners were able to get their hands on it and deny Port Adelaide the ball. So I think that's more the focus point that Port Adelaide will be looking for. So in the coming weeks, they'll have ups and downs and wins and losses, but they will want to be making sure that when they play Brisbane or Adelaide coming up, teams that are a bit contested, they need to make sure they get their fair share. Now, to be fair, when they played Melbourne, the contested ball was, I think, one or two the difference.
Yep.
And in that game, they did it well enough and had enough opportunities to be able to win, but they just fell short through to some execution stuff. Sure. So they're able to do it against Melbourne, but they've got to be able to do it consistently against the good teams.
Everyone's rolling out the record against top four sides. So is it poor coaching in pressure matches, or is it the inability of the playing team?
So I'm pointing to the inability to win the contested footy when it matters most. And, you know, like last year, there was a lot of discussion around late in the year, Scott Lysette's not fit, they were undersized in defence. But both those losses in the finals, they were beaten in the midfield convincingly. And so, you know, that was probably the most disappointing thing. So I think that's what they need to look at. They need to make sure. Like Wines had double-figure contested possessions, and I think there was one other player who was a bit the same. But you look at Dacos and Degully, their balance of contested versus uncontested, they both had roughly 30 possessions. They had 15 and 15. Zach Butters had 31 disposals. He had 8 contested and 23 uncontested. I think Rosie only had 6 or 7 contested possessions. So sometimes there's need to be able to, you know, get the ball on the outside and carry and run, and those boys are as good as anyone. But you still, you know, you still have to have that mechanism in your game where you're able to win the ball on the inside as well. So I think, you know, that's going to be something for Port Adelaide fans to watch as the intensity in games go up. Can they get their fair share of that contested
team? Our show is followed by Sports Day with Jared Healy and Kane Corns. Kano has said that Connor Rosie, Zach Butters and Jason Horne-Francis rarely attend centre bounces together. It's only happened on a handful of times. Would that be a simple fix? You've sat in the big chair?
I don't see that as a big issue. There's a couple of things with this. So rotations, you're spinning guys through there all the time. If you have Rosie and Horne-Francis and Butters all in there all together, then after 3 minutes, one of them will go to the bench, and then the next one will go to the bench, and one will go forward. So all of a sudden you'll have three guns in there at 1 minute, and then you might have Wines, Drew, and the third guy in there who all are the inside guys. And you have then when you have the Horne-Francis and Butters and Rosie, you've got the outside guys. You want to have a balance all the time in there. So I don't see it as a huge problem. The other thing I did see, I saw on Twitter someone sort of responded to Kane after he made the comment. They talked about defensive half pressure acts. Now, I think it was Zach Butters and Jason Horne-Francis were both, one was ranked 157th in the AFL and one was 158th. And so, and that makes sense to me because they're offensive players. Just like when Isaac Rankin goes into the midfield the last couple of weeks for Adelaide, he's had moments where he hasn't quite got that defensive effort right and players get forward on him. But I'm betting if you watch the three-time Norm Smith medalist, Dustin Martin, when he was at his absolute best, he's a front half player. He's not picking up blokes when they go into defence. Other people are employed to do that. And so, you know, I sense that if you've got these attacking-type midfielders, you can't have them all in there at the one time because, you know, that doesn't give you the balance that you require. So that's probably more to the point why they don't all end up in there at the same time.
So let's look at the balance of what is behind centre. They have attacking-minded defenders. Do they defend hard enough? It's one thing about intercept marks, you know, reading the play and intercepting, but when it comes down to, you know, we admired that the undersized defenders like Trent McKenzie would do some great lockdown moments that he had, particularly against Geelong. Mm. But do you see that as an issue with Port at the moment, where they've got defenders who want to be daring and they want to set up the play, but and it was so obvious against Collingwood. The basics of defence were being let down.
Oh, it's really interesting, though, Michelangelo, because I watched the broadcast, and in the first 40 minutes, the broadcast was along the lines of, I think, you know, the Collingwood dynasty's over. They look out of sorts in defence.
Yeah.
Darcy Moore, it's a really dumb one there. He's come off his man. He hasn't impacted the contest.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Maybe what they were able to do last year, they can't do this year. And they just pretty much said that they were a basket case. And then by the end of the match, they're back to their best in defence. Yeah. Darcy Moore was still coming off. His man and still playing loose, but they were just able to maybe a bit more pressure up the field or things started to happen for them. But I don't think, you know, there's not too many. I reckon Harris Andrews is a really tight lockdown player, but he still comes off the mark.
Alex Pearce.
I'm not sure we have 6 one-on-one contests in defence anymore. It really is around sort of zoning, you know, playing, you know, 10 metres off your man and you're hoping you're demanding that the players up the field put good pressure on so you can come off and support in the air or you can intercept mark. So I think the only thing I'd say about Port Adelaide is I'm a little bit concerned in terms of that sort of smallish defender. Like most teams now have a really good small forward. So whether that's, you know, Isaac Rankin for Adelaide or whether it's Toby Green or Cozzy Pickett, those types of players.
Mm.
At the moment, it's left to, I think, Kane Farrell's done a little bit. We've seen Ryan Burton play on Charlie Cameron. He had a little bit of success there. But I just don't know who that player is. And I think they've tried to use Lachie Jones as that player because he's powerful with the way that he can sort of keep up with those quick players. But he gets sort of drawn to the footy and he's probably, you know, he's...
He doesn't read it well enough. He gives his everything. Yeah, he's good one-on-one, but he doesn't read it really well. Hey, change of direction. Josh Rochelle's received a lot of heat this week. Here's a text. Can't be too harsh on Rochelle. Tony McGuinness used to duck his head for years. That's from Will. Just reading it out, Tony. Your views, would you be happy if he cut back on the celebrations and just concentrated on footy? Do you like the fact that he's doing a lot of media with Channel 9 and Double A?
That's an interesting one. Like, I don't know, did anyone watch the Derby last week?
Yes.
Hardly Reid.
Yes.
He celebrated a bit, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And we love
it
because
of
his personality.
Got on the radio, had a crack at David Mundy for not giving him votes, you know, maximum vote. Like, we love it. Mm. We absolutely love it. And we love characters. And then the minute one of them makes a mistake, we just want to, people want to just pile on. And so I'd say to Josh Rochelle, just be authentic, be you. And some players are really exuberant, and I'll use Tom Papley as an example. He celebrates, he gets excited, his teammates love it, and sometimes it pumps them up when they're behind, he gets going, and I've seen Josh Rochelle do that as well, where you know, I think it was last year, the year before, Adelaide are a couple behind. He kicks a goal. He does the shadow boxing. The crowd get up.
That's
the Adelaide get on a bit of a roll. So I think he just has to be true to one person, and that's himself. Mm. Yes, he can be guided, I think, in regards to, you know, how much media he should be doing and some of the stuff that he should be talking about, you know, and it's more talking about team and those celebrations should be involving teammates and all those sort of things. That's the only guidance I would say. But the other stuff, which is, if that's your personality, just be true to yourself.
I like that, Bix. I was always big on the fact having eye contact with your teammates. They're the people you should really be celebrating with. But, hey, the crowd love it too when you get out there and give them a few high fives. Hey, last one, Bix. We'll keep this one short. We're nearly out of time. We're doing a nearest the pin. You're not eligible to win, but we'd like your views because other people can text through on 0427154166 for this wonderful $1,000 prize to go to the Live Golf on Sunday at the Shark Shack Watering Hole Suite. Thanks to Ned Whiskey. You're in a corporate suite overlooking the 12th par 3 hole there. Who wins in the Anzac Day game tomorrow and by how much? And who are you tipping to win the Anzac Day medal?
Okay, I'm going to go with Collingwood by, I think the weather's going to be okay. It looked like it was going to be wet. Yeah. I'm going to say Collingwood by 59 points.
Whoa, 59.
Nick Dacos to win the Anzac medal.
59 points. Yeah.
Why not?
You're not on the frothy. You're not on the frothies, are you? Hey, 59. You don't rate Essendon at all.
Gone win loss. Like they've been up and down, so they're due for a loss again.
Yeah, that's a big loss, isn't it? Hey, Bix, we love chatting to you. You've poo-barred the captain's call. We've got it from a captain, Rooch. We need to put a bit of work into that. Have a great weekend, Bix.
Okay, talk again next week. See ya.
Look forward to it. Mark Bickley there.